Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass on this Thursday, May 30th, 2024. Tom, you're of the age that you're of the age to remember when Memorial Day used to be on May 30th, but then Congress passed the, what is it called, the Uniform Monday Holiday Act back in 1971. But I certainly remember as a kid, we called it Memorial Day Decoration Day. We used to decorate our bicycles, and there was always a big parade in my hometown of Wellmere,
whatever
Illinois.
Day May 30th happened to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also my niece Jill's birthday, too. Happy birthday, Jill. I can't believe that little girl has grown up. And time does move on. We are in our 14th year with our radio program, coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station part of the growing presence of Bustos Media here, five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we have all of our podcasts there available from over 13 years of programs. The live line when we do our telephone interviews, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome now the chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Democrat representing the 5th Supervisorial District, Adelita Grijalva. Adelita, how are you?
Hi. Good afternoon. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. And I do want to ask about your dad. How's your dad doing?
My dad is doing really well, thank you. Everywhere I go, people are asking me and letting me know that he's in their thoughts and prayers. And I just keep saying, well, keep it coming because it's working. So thank you.
Yeah, keep those prayers coming indeed. All right, before we get on to the budget, and I've got a stack of stuff about the budget, we are kind of running out of time with the Regional Transportation Authority. That program was authorized for 20 years, and now it's going to go away in less than 2 years unless there is a reauthorization of a 20-year draft plan. So it's in the hands of the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority Board, and Rex Scott, the vice chair, represents Pima County on that board. But I know you have some pretty strong feelings about regionalism and the RTA. Why don't you share those feelings with our listeners?
Well, I think it is important for us to think about transportation in a regional way. Since leadership changes in the county and the city, the Mayor Romero and I, and with our county administrator, and we've all been working really closely together looking at solutions in a regional way. And so I believe in that concept. But respectfully, District 5 is mostly in the city of Tucson.
It's the most urban of the five districts.
It is. And so when we talk about a win for the city of Tucson, it is a win for the District 5 residents as well. And so I do believe that the city should have their fair share of projects and have the flexibility to be able to do that. And I've never thought that it was an equitable system when you have mayors of very small towns having the same sort of weight and to their vote as the mayor of the city of Tucson. And so we keep kind of pushing the numbers, kind of crunching and making sure. I do believe that everyone should have their fair share, especially the city of Tucson. And if we think about the efforts around transportation, think about the roads that we travel on, regardless of where we're going. The vast majority of those are in the city of Tucson.
Yeah, you traveling to the studio today, you are not traveling on exclusively Pima County roads.
No, I traveled down Ajo and then clearly on all city of Tucson roads. And so their maintenance is important for all of us because we do get criticized. You know, I'll have calls from people saying, you know, there's a big pothole here and there, and it is a city of Tucson road. So it does benefit all of us for us to work together. And my hope is that as we get closer and this discord and the discussion becomes more and more public, our voters, I mean, we're less likely to be supportive of these initiatives if there's a lot of division getting to this point. So I really want to encourage everyone to just give the city their portion, what is due to the city, so we can move on and really start supporting the RTA
Yeah, kind of the way I look at it, you know, I like what's going on in the city. There is the pledge to, as you know, to do every street in a 10-year period. And I'm seeing, I drive on a lot of city roads. I live in District 1 in Pima County, but to get here, of course I have to drive on city streets. And I see a lot of the sealing going on. I don't know what they call it with the black stuff. As long as I don't travel on the after they've just oiled it, I'm fine. But right. I see a lot of it going on. I like that. And then Pima County has announced its road plans. So right. You've got an ambitious schedule too.
We do. And this next budget, we have budgeted $24 million to continue to work towards improving the roads in Pima County. But if the RTA doesn't pass, who is really hamstrung is Pima County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why? And explain that why.
Well, because we don't have a mechanism by which to draw down all of the funds in order to do the kinds of projects that the RTA can do. So what we're trying to do is make sure that everyone gets their, gets their projects in, and then overall Pima County will benefit. But we're saying Pima County government, we wouldn't be able to dedicate much more than what we've budgeted.
So again, the way I would see it, for a complete transportation picture, if you figure the county, the city, and then if the RTA passes, you would have more of a complete package of addressing the roads in the area.
Right, in a comprehensive way to do that and not a piecemeal. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the idea with RTA. Like, we're all going to work together to accomplish the goals for transportation and getting around our region.
All right. The budget will be voted on. There's been a tentative budget. Why don't we begin with what kind of a spending plan do we have here in Pima County?
So we have $1.7 billion that we approved the expenditure limit. So that's sort of where our cap is. And that was passed 3-2 with Supervisors Hines and Christie voting no. And they voted no, I believe, for...
That's not...
that doesn't happen very often.
No, that is an unusual alliance.
Well, and that same...
Alliance is even for just this one vote. You don't normally hear that.
Right. Well, and then later on in the meeting, there was a vote that passed 3-2 with Supervisor Christie and I voting together. So that was I took a pause and said, I don't know that I've ever said that one together.
Yeah.
But what I think the reason that... I believe Supervisor Hines voted no is because he was really pushing for us to do a tax increase. Because, I mean, and I understand the responsibility that Pima County has, and that we have $121 million of state costs, the costs that the state used to cover, that have now been shifted to Pima County, $121 million. So if you look, if the state were continuing to fund all of those expenditures, Pima County would be in a very healthy position. But the worry is that, you know, their budget hasn't closed yet. And so will there be other will there be other costs that will be shifted to Pima County? And if that's the case, it'll be problematic for us. But considering what we know, I thought that it was better to not put a tax increase on our community, because we could do minimal cuts throughout all of our budgets, a 2%. Across every budget, and we were able to, you know, be in the black, so they say.
Yeah, Supervisor Hines, who has said that on this program, that he thinks it was really a dumb decision when they set the state tax rate, the legislature, and now they're shifting these costs, as you say, to deal with the state's own deficit.
Correct.
And we don't know downstream what this spending plan from the state is going to look, how downstream is going to affect the counties.
Right. And I mean, and that was sort of...
We're kind of up against... The legislature here has got less than, about 30 days to get their act together and pass a budget.
Right. And I understood the push, Supervisor Hines' push to try to increase. But when we looked at the impact to our taxpayers... taxes are going, the rate is staying the same, but because of the valuation of our homes, people are going to be paying more. So I had to consider that. This is a regressive tax. So if we were to increase that, who would be hurt the most are, you know, our homeowners, just like us. So I was trying to balance that.
So you said you voted with voted against. There was a 3-2 vote with you or with Supervisor Christie. What was that particular?
Oh, that one was a...
What was that one about?
That one
just
was
curious.
A rezoning. Right, a rezoning. Uh-huh. And I voted against it because it was right along the Tucson Mountains. Yeah, it was... it's beautiful property, and it was just sort of looking at some request to rezone. And I voted no, and so did Supervisor Christie.
All right.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll talk more about the budget with Adelita Grijalva, but first I want to talk a little bit about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. As an added enhancement, they have a liquor license now, so you could have a mimosa with your breakfast or a beer with your lunch. They are open right now for lunch. They do a great lunch. We talk a lot about their breakfast, but the lunch is great as well. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Mona's, again, located northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Take a break right here. Seg 1 in the books. We'll have Seg 2 now coming up after the break with Adelita Grijalva.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things, we love Green Things. Jan and Jack, the owners, very hands-on, actually ran into them up at Mona's last Sunday and had a nice visit with Jan and Jack. And they so appreciate the way Southern Arizona supports their business. And why not support them? I mean, their 13-acre site over there at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, has everything you could imagine for in the way of plants and the the pots, the pottery to put your plants in, and their items at Zocalo Village, all these beautiful imported items. There's handcrafted wood items, mesquite, out of mesquite and other woods at Zocalo Village. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the two websites. Green Things has been around for more than 50 years. I think it's their 53rd year of business, and they are open daily. We continue with our conversation with Pima County Supervisors Chairwoman Adelita Grijalva, who is the Pima County Supervisor representing District 5 on the five-member board of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. So, looking at this budget, you kind of gave us the big picture. There are different, I know that it, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but there's the primary property tax, there's the library district tax, a regional flood control district tax, and then a debt service tax. Let's talk a little bit about libraries for a moment. I think we're very blessed to have almost 30 libraries, right? Something
yes.
like that?
Yes.
And in your district, there are the most of the five districts. I think there's seven in your district. And these we have a really good library system, and it's really kind of like for the neighborhoods, kind of a town square, a place where people can go and they can relax, they can learn. It's a good system.
It's a really a community hub, and I think our library system is doing an amazing job of trying to get people together. They just launched their summer learning, and so children will come in and read books and let their librarians know what they're doing, get little goodies, and all of this is around literacy and access to information, and they fill a void that no other kind of system can do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a huge supporter of the libraries. Obviously, I have a mom who's a librarian, a husband's mm-hmm. librarian, a sister who's a librarian. So if I am not the advocate for libraries, I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm. And there's a charity component too at the libraries.
Mm-hmm. Well, they also started during COVID, and I think it's just extended a way to get resources out, food, other things. Laptop loans. I mean, those are all things that are available at the library, and they continue to sort of think outside the box on what is it that our community needs access to. And so I think they've done an amazing job. Amber Mathewson is the director, and they're just really phenomenal people dedicated to community service.
And one of the current drives about what people might need would surprise some folks.
Oh, yes. So what we're doing right now with our libraries and our county recorder's office is District 5 is sponsoring a period poverty awareness drive. And so if you go to any of your public libraries, there'll be a box there that says period poverty. And what we're doing is we're collecting unused pads, tampons, menstrual products, urinary incontinence mm-hmm. products, mm-hmm. and then we'll be distributing those through the diaper bank, the YWCA, but then to all of our little libraries, we'll have products that will be available to the community based on those donations. So
well, there is, apparently there's quite a need.
There
is. Yeah, and these products are taxed as well, aren't they?
They are,
yeah.
They are. And the price has gone up on everything, and mm-hmm. so that also goes up on that. So if anyone is around and able to donate, if you can just go to your library, call our office, we'll run and pick it up. We have boxes, in our building as well. We have a whole list of them on our website.
So getting back to this, the Pima County budget, Jan Lesher put out a memo. There's several pillars. One of them involves improving the quality of life, which seems to be something we would all, I think, aspire and hope for. What's involved with that? How do we improve the quality of life in this community?
Well, there's several initiatives. A Pima Prospers, a Prosperity Initiative. All of those are designed to really look at how do we, there's certain measurements on how are we improving the quality of life for our community. Some of it has to do with access to health. Others have to do with access to information, transportation, and so housing. So there's all of these ways to measure whether the quality of life is improving. And part of this budget is dedicating resources to a lot of these initiatives and incorporating them into what will hopefully be adopted soon, an overall countywide strategic plan.
There's this fentanyl crisis, which is horrible. Are we going to get some? There was a settlement that will money will go across the country to cities and counties. Are we involved with that?
We are. The opioid settlement, we just approved an intergovernmental agreement with the city of Tucson. And that's another way that we're working regionally to try to address the issue. But what we have to understand about fentanyl is it's very different than some of the other drugs that we've seen, where detox is not a successful model immediately for fentanyl. And so there's a lot of other drug interventions trying to figure out how to create a plan that is going to be effective. Everyone is doing things. So you have the health department doing some stuff, the city of Tucson, sheriff's department, Pima County Health. Everyone's doing their part, but we have to do it together. And really, if we're not doing more interventions at the school level with trying to discourage initial use, then we can throw a ton of money at people already affected, but it's not going to make a difference in our community until we focus on our young people as well.
You know, we talked at the top of the show about regionalism for transportation, but regionalism for dealing with the homeless population, homelessness doesn't stop at the city of Tucson borders.
It does not. And also understanding that being unhoused and having an addiction, a lot of people put those populations together, and that's not always the case. We also have a large population of people that are living that don't have a home, and a lot of that is mental health. And so the focus for the health department and focusing on mental health has also been really beneficial. And I think that looking at the populations and trying to understand why certain people are not able to be successful in our communities. Some of them are young and kind of just aged out of the foster care system. Others are veterans that have a lot of mental health issues. Some people are older and have been pushed out of their housing because housing is in such a high demand.
And they're living in their automobile or truck. Yeah.
Correct. Mm. And then we also have mobile homes. That is, there are several hundreds of thousands of mobile homes in our community that we don't really focus a lot of energy and support on. So there are a lot of ways that we can make the effort, but we have to clearly understand that our businesses need support. We can't have people, you know, living in parking lots and making it difficult for customers to go into mm-hmm. a store. Mm-hmm. But we also have to we understand, I think, in Tucson that we are a good community. We're a better community than people living out on our streets. So trying to wrap around those services and then addressing issues of trespassing and other criminal behavior, that's something that we're also doing on the law enforcement front.
You know, I see the in the county, you see on the corners a sign about, you know, panhandling, asking motorists to consider giving to some organizations that help homeless people.
Right. And I think the reason for that is because we've had so many people died in the street because they were asking for money in the median, which is incredibly dangerous. And so what we're trying to do is if people don't give money, then, you know, it might discourage people from being out there. And also it's incredibly dangerous. Yesterday, it was 103, 104 degrees. It's really hot out there.
Boy, it really breaks my heart to see someone out there with an animal too this time of year.
Yeah. And we have more and more people, you know, because there's so many people that are not spaying and neutering their pets. And so you end up with a lot of little puppies and kitties out there, and people adopt them if they're out. So, we have a lot of people that have pets. So, and then that's one of the reasons I think that people don't take advantage of some of the housing options, because a lot of those places don't allow you to take your pet. And if this has been your only companion for several months.
Is there any news about migrant services? Are we going to have, you know, we were okay here being funded for a few months, but I wonder what happens in the fall.
Yeah, well, we believe because the number of people crossing has reduced pretty significantly. And so based on projections, I was just talking to Administrator Lesher 15 minutes right before I got here, we were talking about it looking like it would get us through the end of this year, this calendar year through December. Mm-hmm. And then that there are still other funding opportunities available through the federal system. And so are we, Pima County, going to apply for those funds again? Or are we going to work with the city for the city to be the umbrella organization? We just want to make sure, as the community that's going to be the most directly impacted, along with our, you know, Cochise and Santa Cruz counties, we want to make sure that those resources are getting where they're needed, and that we don't, you know, lose sight of the need. Because if we have street releases here in Pima County, that will impact our budget fairly significantly. So we want to make sure that the federal government provides those resources.
Do you know what the daily numbers have been running at?
The last number I saw was 700.
Well, that's a dramatic reduction over almost 2,000.
It is, and there's an average. And so obviously there's spikes and it fluctuates, but it's definitely not as high as it's been.
Yeah. All right, Adelita Grijalva, thank you for coming in. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we'll take a break right here, and we will be talking with our border reporter, correspondent Keith Rosenblum. We've got the Mexican voters going to the polls to elect a new president, and the winner will be the first woman in pretty much North America to be hold a presidency, and that's that election is coming up this weekend in Mexico. Keith will preview it. Got a lot to talk with Keith about right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday, May 30th. Coming up tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview, the new city manager, Tim Tomier, will be with us in studio. Kurt Prendergast, who's doing a great job over with his project, the Tucson Agenda, will be joining me in the questioning of Tim Tomier tomorrow. But right now, we want to preview the upcoming election south of the border, the presidential election. The president of Mexico serves 1 6-year term, and we will know, I hope pretty soon after the vote on Sunday, who the winner is. Keith Rosenblum is our longtime border observer on this program. His resume includes border reporting for both the Arizona Daily Star and the Arizona Republic. He is a former congressional aide to the late United States Representative Jim Colby, who represented Southern Arizona for 22 years. Keith is also a fellow at the University of California, San Diego Center for U.S.-Mexican Studies. Hey, Keith, how are you?
Hello, Bill. And I am reflecting, and I'll explain to you in a minute why.
Well, before we talk about... Why am I hearing myself? Kind of an echo. Does Keith have the... You might have a device that's...
Not deliberately. I like hearing myself twice.
Yeah,
but
I think we're... There we go. We're okay. All right. You had a two-part series, op-ed series, that ran in the Arizona Daily Star Sunday and Monday. What was your message, Keith Rosenblum, to the readers of the Arizona Daily Star?
Twofold. Micro message is when you make a decision to drive along a highway that is contested by cartels, smuggling drugs, smuggling people, and the regular sight of gun battles, you should think twice. I did think twice, and I opted to take that route because I had a commitment in Tucson, and I asked some people, is it safe? And some people said, yeah, it's safe, Keith. So probably, in some ways, a stupid risk, but at the same time, can you go through life always worrying that a meteor is going to fall on top of you? And so that trip that I described was last summer, and as I think about it today, it may have been completely foolhardy, because another friend of mine who took that route a few months, actually on Christmas Eve, Craig Ricketts, he wound up being shot in his Suburban. He was driving along. So I want people to understand the micro. The micro is when you take a trip, you take risks, no matter what. And this was one that I took, and it was easy enough. It was an hour and a half going from Altar, Sonora, to Sadik, which is paved, and then Sadik to Sasebe at Sasebe, Sonora, and then Sasebe, Arizona. And it was uneventful. But I went slow. My windows were open. And I was followed for periods of time. It's a drug or a cartel territory. So that was the reason. Number one is I want people to have that identity or identifying or empathy with that. That's something that Mexicans go through all the time now. Is the concern for just personal safety. Forget about going into business, forget about all the other things. You have to be concerned with, will you get from point A to point B safely? And then the macro, if you'll allow that,
sure,
is for people to understand on a much larger level that this is a national or an international issue, and it's not something the United States can control. The United States can't decide anymore about how to handle this Mexican situation than it can what's going on in Gaza, or it can in Ukraine and Russia. And if we're not careful, the mess that we'll get ourselves into in Taiwan, mm-hmm, because words do have consequences. Up until now, Donald Trump's words on Taiwan are nice and tough. Ooh, they're so good. Except for they can get us into conflict. So that was the purpose of the two stories, to just give people an idea of what it's like to be on that road, to have people looking at you, and to know that this is not the way things should be.
Well, the obvious question with the elections coming, has that been a big issue, the security of Mexicans? Has that been an issue in the presidential campaign?
Well, yes and no. And the yes part of that is that everybody's talking about it, but the no part of it is that the two principal candidates who are running really offer no solution. They don't offer their Xochitl Galvez or Claudia Sheinbaum offer nothing that will change things. And that's why I had done this book recently, this Amazon, it's at Amazon now, about the guy who's running for Senate in Sonora, Manuel Fabio Beltranes, because I believe that the only solution, if there is one, and I'm not sure there is at this point, is legislative, and for Mexicans to kind of recover their own franchise, because up until now, the drug policy of Mexico has been almost singularly executed by presidents. That goes back to in the 1990s, but certainly since President Fox in 2000, then President Calderon, then President Peña Nieto, and now President López Obrador. And this policy of abrazos, no balazos, which is hugs, not bullets, sounds great, except for the Mexican murder rate is almost six times what ours is. And except for people in Mexico are looking over their shoulders when it comes time to going out and going for a drive, when it comes time for the Rosenblums to decide whether or not to go to Cibuta, Sonora, which is where my wife's from, and our kids have been brought up with a foot in both cultures. So neither one of the candidates, that is Claudia Sheinbaum, who's the successor, who would be the hand-picked successor, really, of President López Obrador, or Xochitl Galvez, who is the opposition. One of the two will win, and it's more likely, it's looking like it'll be Sheinbaum, who, under any other circumstances, if you told me that there'd be a Jewish woman scientist or a Jewish scientist from Mexico who's going to be the president of the country, I'd be euphoric. Yeah. Except for I think she's just a vapid nothing of a candidate. Hmm. I don't think much more of Xochitl Galvez either. So I don't think the country's on path either way. And if there's not a legislative solution and Mexicans have to decide what they want to do, then the whole country's in trouble.
Let's leave the election for a moment and maybe even talk about this up until the break, which will be coming up in about 3 minutes. But I'm hearing that the federal district, Mexico City, has had temperatures just unheard of, a heat wave down there, like breaking all-time records. And there is also a water shortage that's going on in, you know, the what is it, 20 million people living in the federal district? So I'm just guessing at 20. But that's a huge problem if there's now a water issue.
Well, it is a huge problem, but I don't see that as being. It's what's going to do is it's going to result in rationing the same way that the United States, that people ration. We rationed in Texas. We saw it happen a couple of years ago when Texas had its crisis of electricity, and then in Mexico they've had rolling blackouts. To conserve to keep the grid from collapsing altogether. I think that people see that as being one of the, it's kind of one of the outgrowths or one of the things that's happened during the López Obrador administration, because he's tried to keep government in the game of electricity, government in the game of energy. But the cost of that has been now these things. But again, water and electricity, I see as paling in comparison to the issue of security. So they're both, they're important, but I don't think that one party or the other holds the cards on that. So that's my, I see it as being important, but no more than we would in Tucson if TEP or in Phoenix with Salt River Project or APS told us there would be problems. It's like, damn, why didn't we plan for that? Whereas, and it might be the energy mandates on, solar or using renewables or using fossil, or in the case of APS, nuclear. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know. And it is important. And obviously Mexico City running dry is not a good thing, but they have the ability tomorrow. Mexico City is all the political power and all the financial power of Mexico. They'll bring it in from somewhere. They'll rob. The saying in Spanish is desnudar un santo para vestirle a otro, which means to take the clothes off of one saint in order to dress another one. So it's a bummer, and it will mean some burps in their or blips in their electricity system, in their water system. But no, it's not going to be mass starvation. It's not going to be Gaza, to put it in those terms. The issue really today for Mexico, the primary one and the secondary one, the tertiary one, all the way down, is security. And unless there's something radical. Now, the Mexicans can agree, we discussed this earlier, to go to a negotiated model. They can go to where they almost divide the country, or they can have a bloody battle for years to come. because of the negligence of things up until now. So, but again, the country needs to decide, not a singular executive. It has to be the president making the call.
I want to...
It has to be the president with his legislature. It can't be the president by himself. That's what I meant to say.
I want to pick up on that about, were you inferring of a negotiated settlement with the major cartels? Is that what you were saying?
Yes, I sure am.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm being very pragmatic. I think
yes.
I don't know my U.S. history, but I believe we did something similar with gangs in the U.S. I believe that John Kennedy had Bobby Kennedy talk to Jimmy Hoffa. I believe that you have to, at a certain point, the reality is, unless you want to fight it out. If you want to fight it out, then okay.
Yeah, good point. All right, more with Keith Rosenblum as we get now very close to the eve of the very important elections, presidential election south of the border. Keith will be with us right after we take our break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Perfect time of year to head over to Silver City, the mile high elevation, about 5,000 to 6,000 feet. So tempting this time of year to escape the Tucson heat, which is certainly it's coming. Well, I guess we could say it's here when we get over into the triple digits. But then I look at temperatures like this, midday 82 degrees in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, makes me want to head over there. Their website is visitsouthwestnewmexico.org, only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. We continue now talking about Mexico with Keith Rosenblum, longtime border observer. And during the break, I heard from another longtime border observer. I won't mention his name, but He points out that water shortages have not been limited to the federal district, that Oaxaca is having some problems. And also ongoing is the continued assassination of mayoral candidates. And my friend says there have been dozens this year, including one yesterday. So that's an issue.
Yes, and thank you for the thanks for the reminder. It is, and this is the inevitable result of passivity or of apathy or kicking the can down the road. And so they haven't been, I hate to say this because you know, life is life, they haven't been high-profile assassinations. That is so cynical. Mm-hmm. And yet they've been, and half the time they're not related directly to the candidacy. In other words, there's somebody who already has an issue, and if that person gets into office, then it could sway the local drug gangs. It would be as if the Crips or the Bloods here had a candidate that was preferred, or somebody was a known Crip or a known Blood. I'm not saying that the candidates are uniformly tainted, they're corrupt, anything like that. I'm just saying that these are not the type of event that, say, would have been a Gabby Gifford Safeway shooting, where it's just somebody mm-hmm. who's crazy. It's not a targeted thing. Some of them probably are, but I'm trying to, you know, and has not been, again, it sounds so horrible, but they've not been high profile. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been candidates from mayor's races. They call them municipios. In Sonora, there are 72 municipios or counties. Mm-hmm. In Oaxaca, where you have lifelong conflict between families and tribes, really, or Chiapas. These are, you know, you have Hatfield-McCoy kind of struggles that have been going on forever. So they may be or may not be related to the process, but that, again, is, you hate to say that, well, it's not so bad, or to go into a comparison mode, it makes me. But the reason that I said at the onset of our conversation, Bill, that I'm reflecting is because the election campaigning, the Mexicans were bound by the INE, the Instituto Nacional Electoral, the National Electoral Institute. And so they have to play by all these rules. The campaign started exactly 3 months ago, and last night at midnight was the last time that that the campaigning could go on. So now there's a period that they call the reflection period. I love that. I've been calling friends in Mexico today and asking them, are they reflective? It sounds like something you would do in the Himalayas, you know, like you just go exactly. off and have a reflect on something.
15-minute meditation, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was weird. But now until Sunday is voting day, and up until for the next 4 days, 3 days really, Mexicans are called upon to reflect. There's no active campaigning. There can be no last minute surprises. The Electoral Commission of Mexico is very strict. And so you won't hear anything politically. In fact, President López Obrador didn't have his press conference today. He won't have it tomorrow either. That's banned as well. Huh. So they play by really interesting rules in Mexico. You know, in the U.S., people are still campaigning right up until you go to the polls, and then we're still campaigning.
Oh, yeah.
So, no, this is a slightly different setup, but
no early voting in Mexico, or is there?
There's voting. There's absentee voting up here. For example, at the consulate, you had Consul Barcelo on the in an interview a week or so ago.
Yeah.
There's no early voting and no late voting. There is voting at the consulates in Tucson, as you know, is not one, mm-hmm. but Phoenix is one. And so those people's votes, which are very small, the Mexican vote in the U.S. is enough to sway anything, but it's still important for people to feel, mm-hmm. you know, franchise. So we'll know on Sunday. And if we might not know on Sunday, we supposedly know on Sunday when the polls close, because the Mexicans are good at giving out preliminary results. But don't count on it. There may still be hangers. You know, there may still be results that are too close to call. And I think what's going to happen is the Keith Rosenblum take on what's going to happen, because I know you're going to ask me, is I think, unfortunately, that Claudia Sheinbaum is going to be the next president. She's the woman that I said, under other circumstances, would be great to see as president. I don't think so today. I don't think she's the one that would be appropriate, but I also don't think that Xochitl Galvez is much better. But I think that Sheinbaum will win on the strength of López Obrador's acceptance himself. He's one of the most popular, even though I personally deplore the guy, he's still one of the most popular presidents in the world, not in Latin America, not in North America, in the world. And so when he chooses somebody to be his successor, it's a good bet that person's going to win. And I think she will. And then I'm hoping that the Mexicans are sharp enough to send a divided Congress to be the check and balance on President Sheinbaum. All that said, nothing's going to be solved unless the Mexicans have resolve about how they're going to handle very organic, very systemic issues of public safety. If they don't do that, they have the potential for having a really bizarre, you know, you can go to Cancun, Vallarta, Peñasco, other places that are totally safe, and then not other places in the country, because there's still kind of a laissez-faire, like leave the tourist areas alone. I don't think that'll ever be jeopardized. I think people will always be able to go to Tulum or Cancun or Mexico City. But really, do you want to cede, you know, half or two-thirds of your territory to organized crime?
And what advantage would there be for the organized crime to even bring the tourists into the fold as far as the criminal?
None. I mean, what,
I don't see any upside to killing tourists.
No, tourists will be exempt. There is no upside to it. There's only a downside to it. That's correct.
Okay. We do have you scheduled for Monday, and we will go over, hopefully, the results. But getting back to something we touched on in the first segment with you about power sharing with cartels, this fascinates me because something like that was tried in Colombia, and I wonder how that might look. And we can pick up on that on Monday, but just briefly before we go.
It might look pragmatic, and sometimes you have to. I mean, Bill, Iran bought arms from Israel, two mortal enemies. You know why they bought arms from Israel? Because they had to defeat Iraq. Okay. You, at a certain point, you swallow your morals, and you swallow all the things you said before, and you say, you know what? In order for this not to become more of essentially a civil war, a war involving your police forces and your organized crime, you're going to swallow and make deals. And I don't think that they're going to purge the country of organized crime. I don't know that we have. I don't know that Italy has been able to. But you can make deals. And I think that might end up being the only solution because Mexico might have hit a point of no return. I want to be more optimistic. I can't be.
Okay, Keith Rosenblum. We'll talk again on Monday. Thank you, Keith.
My pleasure.
All right, Keith Rosenblum talking about the very important Mexican elections that are coming up. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. Tomorrow, Tim Tomier, the Tucson City Manager. Tim, relatively new in that role, but not new to the city. He's been around and knows what's going on. So we'll get an update with Tim on our Friday Focus interview tomorrow. But until then, I hope everybody has a great day.